Congress is again raising questions about changes to your federal pay and benefits. Lawmakers are still trying to figure out how to avoid automatic spending cuts, and they have not yet ruled out changes that could affect your wallet. Joining us with some of the details is Federal News Radio's senior correspondent, Mike Causey. Mike, good morning.
Gentlemen, thank you. TGIF, huh?
That's for sure, although that's one more day closer to budget cuts. Yes. So what are negotiators saying about pay and benefits, and what are they doing to avoid the sequestration?
Well, really, I don't think any of us have much of an idea of what they're doing. There are a number of things that are potentially on the table, and we base this on what happened last year. You recall there were several blue ribbon panels, there were congressional committees, there were groups appointed by the president, and then the vice presidential group called the Blair House Group, and they all came up made a variety of proposals as to how to make savings, and a lot of them came out of the hides of federal workers. In the end, of course, none of them came to fruition. Nothing happened, including the super committee, which was the last one to deal with it. But what we've got from that, everybody is saying, look, here are these five, six, seven things that all of them looked at in common, and it makes sense that at least one or two of them will probably come out of this joint House-Senate bipartisan committee that's due to make its report February 29th. And for want of a better term, this is kind of a BRAC-like situation. BRAC is in base realignment and closure. They're supposed to come up with a number of proposals that the House and the Senate will take on an up or down vote. And that's the way they did the BRAC thing, the base realignment thing. But some of the things they're looking at, it's almost a moot point now, is a continuation of the federal pay freeze. So we've already had a vote on that. And as we reported this morning, the Senators McCain and Kyle have another proposal of their own. They're looking at possibly a change in the retirement formula, and that is right now annuities are based on the employee's highest five-year average salary. They may be considering a cut to, they're now based on a high three salary, and they're considering looking at the high five, and that would make a difference of several hundred to several thousand dollars in the starting annuity of a lot of federal workers. There's a possibility they will go to something called a chained COLA, COLA being cost of living adjustment, and the idea is they would use a different formula to determine inflation-adjusted raises for retirees, and that could result in about a 0.4% smaller reduction each year in the future. They're considering giving vouchers to federal workers, and that is each year federal workers and retirees would have a fixed amount of money to buy their health insurance, and over a period of time, the amount that they kick in for their health insurance would increase, and the government share would decrease. So that could take the payment from a typical federal worker or retiree. They now pay about 30 cents on the dollar of their health premium. And under this, it's estimated by some that could go within a few years to as much as 40%. And that's a tremendous change because premiums are going up and the amount they would be paying would also go up. So there's a variety of things out there, the horror list, if you will.
Mike, from a historical perspective, how much in the past have federal pay and benefits been such a big part of the conversation about cutting budgets and trying to do more with less?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I met recently with Judy Park. She's a former lobbyist for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees for a long, long time, and we were thinking back, and this theory has been, the reality has been, that over the years, federal pay and benefits have done nothing but improve. And the unions and groups have fought, you know, rear guard actions to keep them from cutting things, but it's all been up, and the paradigm has shifted here, and you know, the fact that we're seriously talking about significant cuts in federal worker pay and benefits is really brand new.
And Mike, is it fair to say, too, that there's Republicans and Democrats that are both on both sides of the issue of pay and benefits? Because if you look at the vote in the House a couple of days ago for freezing the pay, it was like 3-1, which exceeds the ratio of Republicans to Democrats, which means some Democrats voted for it. I haven't looked at the roll call whether some Republicans voted against it, but there have traditionally been some Republicans who are strongly supporting federal workers. So you can't necessarily go strictly on party line here, though, can you?
That's right. If you look in the Washington area, for instance, if you are a Republican, if you're a Frank Wolf, remember Representative Tom Davis, Connie Morello before them in Maryland, they were all very pro-federal worker. In fact, that's kind of the theme of my column today, is the fact that it's almost a Washington area phenomenon with a few exceptions. But if you're from a big Washington area, if you're from an area with a large federal population, you tend to be much more sympathetic, either out of understanding or out of survival.
We're speaking with senior correspondent Mike Causey.
Mike, one thing that occurs to me as you're going through, it's a lot of the Washington area congressmen and senators who are really speaking out against changing federal benefits and pay. And we've talked about this many times, 88% of all federal workers are outside the Washington, D.C. area. Where's the disconnect? I still don't see why. I guess I don't understand why a lot of the members of Congress still want to affect federal employees when there's so many that live in their districts.
Yeah, you know, that's a mystery to me. Representative Eric Cantor, I guess he's the number two man in the House. He has something. He represents suburban Richmond and part of the Shenandoah Valley. It's one of those many gerrymandered congressional districts. But he's got a substantial number of federal workers in his district, and yet he's sort of towing the party line, no pun intended, with this some of their anti-federal legislation. On the other hand, you've got a few people I would consider unlikely. Senator Joe Lieberman, an independent from Connecticut. Ms. Collins, a Republican from Maine. Norman Dix, a Democrat from Washington State. People from all over the place, and they just seem to like federal workers and understand them. I think one that both likes them, understands them, and realizes that he has a lot of them in his state is Senator Akaka of Hawaii.
And Mike, let me ask you this. You and I both remember the times when the senior executive service was established and the time when they switched from SERS to FERS.
Yep.
There have been pivotal moments in the history of the civil service caused by whatever the circumstances were. They were worried about a big exodus of the Roosevelt era people starting then during the Carter administration. Now we're worried about an exodus of people that came, you know, maybe in the Nixon, Ford administration era through on to that are working now. Do you sense that maybe instead of all this niggling, we might be on the brunt of something brand new, a whole new approach to federal pay and benefits?
Yeah, people have been predicting the retirement exodus really since 1999, and every year they've said, you know, all of the brain power is going to leave. We'll be lucky if there's anybody in a federal agency that knows how to turn the lights on the next morning, and it hasn't happened. Starting about 2 years ago, there seemed the retirements have picked up. You now have a situation in the Postal Service, the Navy, probably 20 different federal agencies now are offering buyouts and early outs. And I think a lot of the old-timers who have been holding on for one reason or another are likely to call it a day. If they make significant changes in retirement benefits, and if they grandfather in current people or make them effective on a date certain, this could stampede a retirement exodus. So I think it's wait and see. But if you look at the years 2009 and 2010, the contrast is startling. 2009 was the best year federal workers and retirees have ever had on Capitol Hill. About six different long hoped-for items were passed and came into law. And then the following year, the drumbeat started for cutting pay and benefits.
Mike, you mentioned the February deadline that's coming from this joint committee. What are some other the key dates or time frames that federal employees should look out for, should pay close attention to in terms of potential legislation that affects their pay and benefits over the next, you know, 6 months to a year?
Well, I think what's happened in the last week or so, if you consider how slow and ineffective Congress has been for the last few years under both Republicans and Democrats, this is a bipartisan ineptitude that's been building up. But if you look at what happened, I think last Thursday they introduced this legislation that would freeze federal pay for another year and freeze congressional pay. Members of Congress haven't had a raise in four out of the last 6 years anyhow, but this this is an election year. Their numbers are down. They're into single digits in approval rating with the public. And this was introduced on Thursday, and it passed this week. So that's jets rocket speed for any legislation in Congress. And then I see this morning on our lead story on our homepage, Jared Serbu's piece about the Senators McCain and Kyle introducing this legislation that would further deal with federal pay and rescue the Pentagon from sequestration. So I think we're in an era here, particularly because it's an election year, and maybe solely because it's an election year, where things are going to change and they're going to move very fast and probably not favorably for federal workers.
Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you, guys.